Good afternoon, Sean. How are you today?
Man, I'm doing great. How are you?
I am excellent. It's good to see you again. You ready to talk some more about this debate that we were at?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, folks, thank you for joining us. You might remember Sean and I were both present at the Neubauer-Reeves debate on the AD 70 doctrine. Sean and I have one video which previewed the debate, two videos that have reviewed the debate. And what we want to do this week and in upcoming weeks is go back on some of these big issues that were hit in the debate and kind of break them down and talk about them, present what the speakers were saying, maybe in terminology that's a little bit more understandable, and then try to draw the best biblical conclusion that we can. Sound about right, Sean?
Sounds good to me. And we're not trying to re-debate the debate either. I think that's important to notice.
Yeah, not at all. Nope, I think it stands on its own merits. Both men presented their positions. And it's up to all of us as individuals to take our Bibles in hands, to look at what both men said, and to see which position best represents what God revealed in Scripture.
Absolutely.
So, Sean, what did you decide? What did you mandate that we'll talk about today?
Well, I think we decided we're going to talk a little bit about the book of Zechariah. Since it's such an easy book to talk about, we decided to tackle that, try to get it done in 40 minutes. So we'll see how that goes.
So if we weren't content with our YouTube numbers already, the numbers are about to drastically plummet as everybody clicks X after hearing, hey, guys, we're talking about Zechariah. Just exactly what you wanted to do on a Thursday afternoon at 4:15.
Hey, that's all right. We've been doing it all week, so.
That is the truth. So if you don't have a cup of coffee brewing, perhaps now would be the time. If you don't drink coffee like me, maybe now is the time to start.
Ooh, yeah.
So, all right, Sean, let's recap a little bit about Zechariah and why Zechariah and particularly his prophecies in chapters 12, 13, and 14 came up in the debate.
Okay,
go ahead, please. You got it.
Well, Mr. Neubauer introduced Zechariah as essentially an affirmative argument. It seems like he got into it a little bit while he was in his negative, but really focused on it Thursday night and told us that the phrase "in that day" that you see quite a few times in the book of Zechariah, that it always refers to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70.
And so Pause button.
Go ahead.
Pause button. If you want to pull up the videos that Olson Park, olsonpark.com, is that the website,
mm-hmm.
I believe?
Yeah.
Olsonpark.com, the videos of the debate are up there now. If you go to night three and mm-hmm. you go mm-hmm. to the 1 hour, 18 minute and 20 second mark, you will hear Mr. Neubauer say that. We're not pulling that out of thin air. This
right.
is not something that we're coming up with. This is not us putting words in any debater's mouths. That is exactly what Mr. Neubauer said. So that being said, Sean, back to what you were saying.
No, that's a good point. I'm glad you said that. And hopefully we'll have the videos and be able to play clips from now on so that we're not just saying people said things. But it's definitely there. And so he goes to chapter 12, 13, and 14. Specifically, that seemed to be where he focused on. And just tried to show where if you accept the phrase "in that day" means AD 70 destruction of Jerusalem, then all of these passages that he said we viewed as, or Mr. Reeves viewed as being Pentecost, just wouldn't work out. The more I read Zechariah, the less I see AD 70 in chapters 12, 13, and 14. I don't know that I would say I specifically see the day of Pentecost in chapters 12, 13, and 14, but I cannot find the destruction of Jerusalem in those chapters. We were talking just a moment ago. I haven't made my mind up, but I think if you're going to find it, it's going to be in chapter 10. So, Tyler, the time marker that you gave in the video, he was really emphasizing Zechariah chapter 14, verses 1 through 5, and telling us that has to do with the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. And by the way, he has to have that because of Matthew chapter 24, which I think is why he was making such a big deal about Zechariah, because you've got similar language over in Matthew chapter 24. And so if he gets it in Zechariah, he can put it into Matthew 24. The problem is, I can't find it in Zechariah chapter 14. It just, if you read all five verses, which I'm not trying to be rude, but Mr. Neubauer never read all five verses to us. If you read all five verses, I don't know how it's possible to say this is AD 70 and the destruction of Jerusalem. Is that fair?
And I think that's fair. And Sean, the thing that happened in the debate that I think did bother me, and I think bothered mm-hmm. you too.
Yeah.
Mr. Neubauer made this assertion that Mr. Reeves believed that Zechariah 14 and verse 2, the women being ravished, and Mr. Neubauer in that time mark, and makes a big play on that made a lot of people uncomfortable, myself included, and said that that's what Mr. Reeves believed, that happened, and that happened on Pentecost.
Yeah.
The problem is that Mr. Reeves never said that, never intimated that. That was an example of what Mr. Neubauer complained about the next mm-hmm. night mm-hmm. of charging someone with a belief that they don't actually have.
Yeah.
So, Sean, why don't we then do what didn't happen in the debate, and let's read all five verses.
Okay.
Chapter 14, verse. And you're in the New American Standard, aren't you, Sean?
Yeah, let me get down to chapter 14 real quick.
I'll take the first three verses if you'll take verses 4 and 5.
Okay, are we going to read the whole verse?
Let's read the whole verse and let's get it on the record, and then
all right.
we can
good.
Come back and say
Sounds
what we
good.
Want, all right?
Sounds
so
good.
Verse 14, behold, the day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided among you. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city will be captured, the house is plundered, the women ravished, and half of the city exiled, but the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle.
In that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which is in front of Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives will be split in its middle from east to west by a very large valley, so that half of the mountain will move toward the north and the other half toward the south. You will flee by the valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains will reach to Azel. Yes, you will flee just as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Then the Lord my God will come and all his holy ones with him.
And Sean, what we read there at the end of verse 5, that's kind of that Zechariah language that's going to tie in with Matthew 24 and some of those other
mm-hmm.
Olivet discourse passages.
Absolutely.
And so that's part of that connection that Mr. Neubauer was making between Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, or Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and mm-hmm. the book of Zechariah.
Absolutely.
So, Sean, let's cycle back here to verse 2.
Okay.
That really is where Mr. Neubauer began to make his argument and asked Mr. Reeves to respond. I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. And he said, AD 70 right here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
The city will be captured.
Mm-hmm.
The house is plundered. The women are ravished. And half of the city exiled. But the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Now, Sean, you and I have talked about this previously.
Yeah.
The last half of verse 2 didn't get a lot of airtime during the debate.
No, that last phrase, but the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tyler. I never heard Mr. Neubauer read that those words.
I didn't either.
And I'll be honest with you, he was moving through it rather quickly, which I understand. He had a lot of ground to cover. I'm not belittling that. He was moving through it rather quickly. I think he had most of his verses up on charts. We really weren't having time to turn pages. I didn't even catch it until Mr. Reeves got up in his negative and said, let's finish this verse. And it dawned on me what had happened. So I don't know that everybody in the audience caught it. If you're watching the videos and you're just going through Mr. Neubauer's affirmatives, you may not catch this. But go back and listen again. He never finishes this verse. And Tyler, that's pretty important to his position, isn't it?
It is. Let's talk about why that is. The argument from Mr. Neubauer, as presented in his second affirmative on Thursday evening was that chapter 14 and verse 2 refers to the destruction of Jerusalem. Well, if we look at verse 2 and what is described, the city captured, okay, that happened in the destruction of Jerusalem. Nations against Jerusalem to battle, that happened. Houses plundered, that happened. Women ravished, I'm pretty sure that happened. Half of the city exiled. We know that some, I don't know that I would even say exiled, we know that some escaped.
Mm-hmm.
But exile, to my knowledge, doesn't really describe what happened in the destruction of Jerusalem. It was simply that destruction. People were killed. Josephus, if you're accounting him as a worthy historian, is going to record that the Roman forces were slitting the belly of Jewish people who were fleeing out of Jerusalem at this time. But here's the part, Sean, that caused me a lot of trouble. The rest of the people will not be cut off from the city.
What city?
What city? And if this is Jerusalem, 50% of the city remained? 50% of the people remained in the city?
Yeah, and that's what I mean by what city. Jerusalem's the city that's destroyed. How do you remain in Jerusalem? That does not fit anything that I understand about the destruction of Jerusalem.
Not at all. In Luke chapter 21, when Jesus, and this is a passage I think Mr. Neubauer, you, I, Mr. Reeves, most folks coming from our perspective would agree Luke 21 is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Luke chapter 21 and verse 21. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, let those who are in the midst of the city depart, and let not those who are in the country enter the city, because these are the days of vengeance, Jesus says, in order that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Woe to those who are with child and to those who nurse babes in those days, for there will be great distress upon the land and wrath to this people. Verse 24, for they will fall by the edge of the sword and will be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. They will fall by the edge of the sword. But that's not what Zechariah 14:2 says if it's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem.
No, I don't know how you would reconcile those two, especially since the whole point of Luke 21 and Matthew 24, Jesus is saying, hey, when you see these signs that tell you Titus and the Romans are coming, get out.
Get out.
They're leaving. These people in chapter 14 and verse 2 are staying, which, right. How could that be the same people in the same situation in the same city? That's very contradictory to me.
I would agree. And then, Sean, I remember you nudging me at one point in the debate and saying, look at verse 3. Verse 3 goes right along with this in presenting a case against understanding in that day as a reference to the destruction of Jerusalem. Do you happen to remember what you said, Sean?
Oh, man, I nudged you so many times, I don't remember.
Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations.
Yeah,
those would be the nations that have come against Jerusalem, as when he fights on a day of battle.
When did that happen in AD 70? Yeah.
Yeah. Is the Lord simultaneously bringing in the Romans and defeating the Romans at the same time? That's really contradictory, especially in light of verses 4 and 5, when verses 4 and 5 place all of this in the context, or place verse 3 in the context of, in that day.
Mm-hmm.
Did God in that day go forth and fight against the nations?
Well, not in any sense that I know of.
And in chapter 12, Mr. Neubauer is going to tell us, verse 2 and verse 3, Jerusalem is the nations, rather, are coming up to make siege against Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the nations are coming up to make siege against Jerusalem, and this is God pouring out judgment led by Christ against Jerusalem, then how is verse 3, the Lord, chapter 14 and verse 3, how is the Lord going forth and fighting against those nations when he's the one bringing those nations against Jerusalem?
I have no idea. And, you know, it bears pointing out, look, there's obviously a lot of figurative language going on here.
Sure.
Right? But a figure can't represent its opposite. You know, you don't have a figure for up that really means down. So whatever this means, it can't mean that the nations defeat Jerusalem. Because the Lord goes out and defeats the nations. And by the way, while we're over in Zechariah chapter 12, I think this sets it up as well. Notice verse 2. Behold, I'm going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes reeling to all the peoples around. And when the siege is against Jerusalem, it will also be against Judah. And it will come about in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will be severely injured. And all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it. If what we're talking about here is Jerusalem being wiped off the map, the temple destroyed, how did they become a source of injury for Rome? It obviously, there's a figure there. But how could that be a figure for Roman victory and Jerusalem being destroyed? I don't understand.
So, Sean, here's what I'm seeing, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree.
Okay.
I think it seems to me that Mr. Neubauer and those who would join in his view of the end,
mm-hmm.
which he views as the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70.
Right.
They come over here to Zechariah 12, Zechariah 13, Zechariah 14. And we see in that day, and we're told explicitly in that day means the destruction of Jerusalem.
Right.
In AD 70. But then when we see Jerusalem, the actual word Jerusalem in the text, sometimes it's going to mean the mm-hmm. literal city of Jerusalem. And sometimes it's going to be this figurative, spiritual New Jerusalem. But there's nothing in the text that's really going to indicate
right
that to us, and we're just going to have to trust Mr. Neubauer when he tells us, well, in this verse it's this and in this verse it's that.
You know, whenever I'm studying my Bible and I find myself creating that kind of situation in a text, I have to remember that God is not the author of confusion, and so he's not going to use one word two different ways in a single passage without telling me that he's doing it. Because otherwise, it's just confusion and chaos. It's up to me, if he doesn't, to figure out when does it mean what. And it shouldn't be up to me. It should be up to the scriptures to tell me what's under discussion. I think he's talking about spiritual Jerusalem all the way through this section.
I do
too. What he's talking about, as far as I can understand, and we talked about this a little bit earlier today, look at chapter 13. Chapter 13 and verse 9, and I may be getting ahead of us here, but that's okay.
No, go ahead.
If you work down through chapter 13, what you find out is that the rebellious of Israel are being separated out from the people of God.
Yeah.
And the rebellious of Israel are going to be done away with. So we're talking about God's plan for redemption, the messianic kingdom, right? If you go to verse 7, awake, O sword, against my shepherd, against the man, my associate, declares the Lord of hosts, strike the shepherd that the sheep may be scattered, and I will turn my hand against the little ones. It will come about in the land, declares the Lord, that the two parts in it will be cut off and perished, but the third will be left in it. So what he's envisioning is the people of the land, and two-thirds of them are done away with, and one-third of them are preserved. And I will bring the third part through the fire, refine them as silver is refined, and test them as gold is tested. And here's how I know who they are. He says, they will call on my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people, and they will say, the Lord is my God. This one-third that goes through the fire that's refined, they're in a covenant relationship with God. And I think what chapter 14 does is it kind of ends Zechariah, is it's offering an explanation. How's God going to do that? And what you find out is that his people, his nation, first half of the book is Zion, second half of the book is Jerusalem. You might picture Psalm 2 where all the nations are railing against God's chosen king, and he just laughs at them. And you know, his king chastens them with a rod of iron. I think it's something similar to that. that's being portrayed here in chapter 14. In other words, he's going to protect his people, and the nations can do what the nations want to do. They're going to be judged for it. Now, is that specifically the day of Pentecost? Obviously, that would play a part in this. But I don't know that in that day is talking about a 24-hour day. And by the way, Mr. Neubauer seemed to take two different positions on that as well. You know, a lot of times the prophet will talk about a day. And they don't mean between sunrise and sunset. They're talking about a period of God's plan, when God's going to bring something about. And I think that's what's going on here. We're seeing the rise of the Messianic kingdom. It's not about the destruction of a physical city. Zechariah and God in Zechariah are concerned with people, not places. And if we miss that,
that's a great point.
If you miss that, you miss Zechariah.
Let me add something else I think we need to remember when we're reading the book of Zechariah. Zechariah is a Jewish prophet who was writing to Jewish people about the hope of the Jews, the Messiah who was to come, okay? So take that, and Sean, I think you're absolutely right with what you're saying there in chapter 13 about this remnant, this refined and purified remnant. I think you see that also in chapter 12. Come back to chapter 12 with me.
Okay.
And look at, let's look starting in verse 8. Verse 8, in that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Now, if I'm taking the full preterist realized eschatologist position, that's challenging right there on the onset. We're going to have to spiritualize Jerusalem there. Okay. Mm-hmm. In that day, the Lord will defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and the one who is feeble among them in that day will be like David. Jesus is going to talk in Matthew 24, the Olivet Discourse, about people who were feeble and encumbered with children and things like that. Mm-hmm. And he says that we ought to be praying for them.
Mm-hmm.
Here, the feeble are going to be like David.
Mm. That's a good point.
There's a distinction here between what Jesus is talking about and what Zechariah is talking about. Keep reading. Verse 9, in that day I will set about to destroy all the nations that come out against Jerusalem. We've pointed out the difficulties that the realized eschatologist has with that passage.
Right.
Verse 10, I will pour out on the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication, so that they will look on me whom they have pierced, and they will mourn for him. Yeah. Here you've got, remember, Jewish prophet to Jewish people, Jewish hope. Here people are realizing what God's plan actually was. They are looking at Jesus. They are seeing the one whom they pierced and realized this is the idea of Acts chapter 2, though it's not a specific reference to Acts 2. Those who heard Peter's words were cut to their heart and said to Peter and the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? And so they mourn. They will mourn for him as one mourns for an only son, and they will weep bitterly over him like the bitter weeping over a firstborn. Verse 11, in that day, Sean, you and I are viewing this as a messianic day. This is the work of the Messiah, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in that day, there will be great mourning in Jerusalem. Here you have God's people mourning, specifically in the context of Zechariah, Jewish people mourning, who are the people of God. Why? Because they had put to death the Prince of Life.
Mm-hmm.
They've realized it now.
Which really
They're
gets to the heart
chapter
of...
chapter 13 and verse 1.
Yeah, yeah.
But, right, go ahead, Sean, pick it up.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
Oh, we're good.
One of the challenges of doing this from distance. But no, I was just going to say that really gets to the heart of Zechariah's message, doesn't it? Because, you know, he's come to these people who are supposed to be building this temple. If you go to Daniel chapter 9, God makes it real clear the Messiah is not coming till the temple's built. And so they're not progressing in this plan as they were supposed to. And Zechariah, along with Haggai, are imploring these people, get out there and build that temple. And until you build that temple, Messiah doesn't come. And I think what Zechariah does here in 12, 13, and 14 is really tell the people, here's why you want him to come. This is a big deal. And so he gives you these blessings. You know, those visions in the first part are kind of scary. A whole lot of judgment in those first visions. But you get over here to the second part of the book, And it's the other side of the coin. Here are the blessings. Here may not be the best word to use, but incentives.
Yeah.
To go out and to get busy and build that temple. It's worth your while because of what God's going to bring next, the plan that he's working through. And you get down to 13 and verse 1, and forgiveness is flowing. Life is available. Yes, there's sorrow in that the Son of God is pierced. But because of that, forgiveness is available. This isn't about destruction.
That is the that's the messianic day that Zechariah is talking about. Again,
absolutely.
As you and I understand, as Mr. Reeves mentioned, and as Mr. Neubauer mentioned at one point in the debate, not a literal 24-hour period what we're talking about here, although you're right, Mr. Neubauer seemed to go back and forth on that, but you're talking about, if we could use the phrase, a prophetic day.
Right.
This is a period of time in which the working of the Messiah would be accomplished and the things associated with the Messiah and his work.
Absolutely.
I want to go back, Sean, if we could, to chapter 14 again.
Okay.
And when you look at verses 1 and 2.
Okay.
We were told specifically this is the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70, the hand of the Romans. And then as we look at verses 4 and 5, in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives. And admittedly, verses 4 and 5 didn't get broached a whole lot in the discussion. But if you go back and you read some of what Mr. Neubauer has written on that, he's got an article entitled Zechariah 14 and the Prophecy of the Second Coming of Christ. He talks about how Jesus coming and standing on the Mount of Olives there in Zechariah 14, 4 and 5, that is the idea of Jesus coming and ruling with a rod of iron. It's not a picture of heaven where Christians are given metal rods to hit unbelievers over the head like a spiritual whack-a-mole, but rather a spiritual rule through the gospel. And that's a quote from his article there. So we've got verses 1 and 2 being the destruction of Jerusalem. We've got verses 4 and 5 being the destruction of Jerusalem, but now we've shifted Jerusalem to something spiritual, whereas in verses 1 and 2, that Jerusalem is physical and literal. But then what do we do with verse 3? We're still stuck, Sean, with verse 3. The Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fights on the day of battle. We're still stuck.
Still stuck. And I don't know how you would disconnect verse 2 and verse 3.
I think
which is what he would have to do to make a transition there. Yeah.
Or verses 3 and 4, because verse 4, the beginning of it, gives the context for verse 3 in that day.
Yeah, and if you were just to read that as a phrase in the context, it'd be the day of battle, right? Of verse 3?
I would tend to
sounds
think
like
so.
It.
So, Sean, let's do this then. I think we've covered what Mr. Neubauer was saying there and what the response might have been and cleared up some of those issues. Let's wrap this up, Sean, by talking about what is Zechariah, and we've hinted at this already, what is Zechariah actually talking about here? It's great that we might be able to respond to something that we consider false, but that's not really beneficial if we can't advocate for what is right. So, Sean, as you look at this, what is going on here in Zechariah? You know, you mentioned in that day is really important, right? That phrase is used 21 times by Zechariah.
So it might matter.
Yeah, most of them coming in chapter 12, 13, and 14. So if we understand how Zechariah is using that phrase, that goes a long way towards understanding what's going on in this book.
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, if you started in Zechariah 14 and verse 9 and just kind of read the conclusion to this prophecy, it seems to me like it would help us to understand that. Because now we're looking forward to a time when the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be the only one, and his name, the only one. and all the land will be changed into a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. Jerusalem will rise and remain on its site from Benjamin's gate as far as the place of the first gate to the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananel to the king's wine presses. People will live in it. There will no longer be a curse, for Jerusalem will dwell in security. I think his point there is the spiritual Jerusalem is going to be more secure than Nehemiah's wall could ever make it. And so we're looking forward to something far better than what these people that Zechariah is talking to are building with their hands. Now, they got to get it built to get there. But Zechariah is looking beyond that again. Here's why this matters. And so the rest of this chapter, I won't read all the rest of the chapter, but the curse is gone. And things are different as a result. People are going to turn toward the Lord. Verse 17, it will be that which... And it will be that whichever of the families of the earth does not go up to Jerusalem to worship the king, the Lord of hosts, there will be no rain on them. And the family of Egypt does not, if the family of Egypt does not go up or enter, no rain will fall on them. It will be the plague which the Lord smites the nations who do not go up to celebrate the Feast of Booths. You're either going to worship the Lord or you're left out.
Yeah.
This sounds like the Messianic kingdom to me. Verse 20, in that day there will be inscribed on the bells of the horses, holy to the Lord. And the cooking pots in the Lord's house will be like bowls before the altar. Every cooking pot in Jerusalem and in Judah will be holy to the Lord of hosts. And all who sacrifice will come and take of them and boil in them. And there will no longer be a Canaanite in the land, in the house of the Lord of hosts in that day. Why what are we talking about cooking pots for?
Canaanites,
right. You know, the thing with the cooking pots is kind of interesting. If a mouse ran across one of your pots, you couldn't use it anymore. It was unclean. Just think about that, how difficult that would be. What we're being shown here is a situation in which everything is pure and everything is clean. That's not going to happen in any physical location. We're talking about a spiritual reality that's accomplished by the work of the Messiah that is enduring and lasting and will overcome everything else. And whatever Zechariah's audience needed to do to come closer to that day was worth doing. You know, in Nehemiah's day, strap a sword on your side and go out there and lay bricks, right? In Zechariah's day, it's let's go build this temple, Nehemiah's day as well. Let's go build this temple so that the Messiah can come. So we don't need that wall anymore. For that matter, we don't need that temple anymore. You know, as Revelation would talk about it, the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And so what we're seeing is a movement toward that reality that's going to be accomplished through the work of the Messiah. So it's a really important book.
It is. And then that work of the Messiah that you said was going to conquer all of this, that's the significance there at the end of verse 21. There will no longer be a Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts in that day, because those distinctions between Jew and Gentile in Christ's kingdom are gone.
Yeah, you know, and think about the situation. You know, if you went back and read Nehemiah, you got a man like named Sanballat living in the temple who's not an Israelite, who is suing to get the wall stopped. Or before the temple was built, he was suing to prevent them from building the wall. Then he moves into the temple, and he's living where the tithes were supposed to be stored. Man, they had a problem. They had a problem with these unclean people. Nehemiah chapter 13, it was unclean people coming in and trading on the Sabbath, tempting the people to violate the Sabbath. Zechariah says, we're going to get past all that. We're not going to have this one foot in, one foot out, maybe we're the people of God, maybe we're not mentality that you see in Ezra and Nehemiah. We're working towards this day of the Messiah, this kingdom of the Messiah, where you're either going to be serving Him or it's not going to rain on you, right? Which we don't like to be rained on, but the point there is famine. You're going to be punished.
Spiritual blessings are either present or absent.
As I was reading through this yesterday, I kept thinking about, you know, as Israel was getting ready to go in the Promised Land, and they stood between the two mountains, and on one side they called out the curses, and on the other side they called out the blessings. Zechariah is doing a little bit of that for us, only it has to do with our acceptance of and participation in the Messianic kingdom. For his audience, it was doing those things that would further God's plan. God says certain markers are going to occur. I'm waiting on you to build this temple so that I can bring my Messiah. Do that, and then you can be incorporated into that kingdom. So a powerful message for them. Apparently it worked. They go build the temple. But if you take the application of that, a powerful message for us, what I need to do is I need to go out and I need to serve the Lord today. By the way, that comes back to realize the eschatology. Because after four nights of a debate, I still don't know why I need to serve the Lord today if all the promises of the Scripture were fulfilled in A.D. 70.
If spiritual death has been conquered,
yeah,
why do any of it? Why are you and I wasting our time doing this?
Well, I hope it's not a waste. Surely at least one person will watch this on YouTube. But no, I see your point. Why would a man like, and I'm not trying to belittle anybody, but why would a man like Mr. Neubauer spend his time going and debating this issue, all the work and preparation that goes into that? It's not like he's had one debate. He's done this for a while. Why be as passionate as he got several times? And I appreciated his passion.
Absolutely.
Why be as passionate about it if there's nothing to look forward to? Now, I know he would say because I'm enjoying it now. But my question is, why does it matter what I do or how I feel about it if spiritual death was conquered in AD 70, if Hades was destroyed, if everything I'm going to get, I already have? I'll be quite honest with you. I'm not perfectly content with what I have right now as far as my experience in life. Zechariah says, oh, no, there's something far better. There's something far more. And you need to be serving the Lord so that you can participate in it. And that's a message that gives me hope and encouragement and maybe a little goading every now and then to get up and get busy.
I think that's a great point. And Sean, I think we met our goal of discussing these major points in the book of Zechariah and not taking 5 hours to do it.
Hey, I think we got some of it in anyway. So what are we going to talk about next, Tyler?
Well, let's see. We've got, what do we have on the docket? There's Hosea we need to talk about at some point. Mm-hmm. And then there is Hades we need to talk. How about we do that next week, Sean? You want to talk
okay.
about Hades?
Let's talk about Hades next week. I think that'll be good.
All right. Then let's plan on that. And folks, we want to thank you for joining us, including, if you're still out there, the one person that downvoted our video from last week.
Wow, did that happen?
Yeah, we got one downvote. So
we'll wear it
as a badge of honor, and we'll assume it was because of our bald heads, and we'll try.
If it was only one, I'm pleased.
Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you have a great day, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you very much.